Hello and welcome to episode 31 of Don't Be So Dramatic. I'm Steve Bradley.
I'm Jason B. Moore.
Now, we have the pleasure today of joining a special guest in her dressing room in the Adelphi Theatre. Now, our guest today, the credits go on and on and on. It seems like she never stops working. So let's, I'll just reveal a few of them. We've got here Forbidden Broadway, Closer Than Ever, which I love, by the way. Sunday in the Park with George, a nominated Olivier Award nomination for Best Supporting Role in Lend Me a Tenor in 2012. We are joined by the fabulous Sophie Louise Dan today.
Hello there.
Thank you for joining us today and inviting us to your dressing room.
I'm delighted to host this in my dressing room. It's lovely. It's like having a little pied-à-terre.
Yes, it is.
It's very nice. Isn't it?
It's very nice.
You notice that, yes, you can't see it, but I've got a lovely throw on the sofa. Yes.
It's very relaxed.
It's ambient lighting.
It's very warm as well, which we appreciate.
Yeah, a little hot.
Yeah.
And lovely street noise from the drinkers outside.
Maiden Lane, welcome.
So, thank you for coming on the show today. We want to talk to you. You're appearing in Maiden Dagenham at present.
I certainly am, Maiden Dagenham, and I'm playing the powerhouse that was the Labour MP, Barbara Castle, Baroness of Blackburn. And my God, what shoes they are to fill. It's just a real treat to be able to give her a voice.
Yeah.
In the musical theatre genre.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. So let's start from the beginning.
Because it's a very good place to start.
That was coming, wasn't it? Where did it start for you? When was the moment that you decided you wanted to be an actress and perform?
Well, I was one of those children that needed their energy channeling. And I say that with love. And it happened by coincidence, really. My sister, who was equally talented but didn't go into the profession, Annalisa, had a formative training in Sussex, where I was born and bred. And she started having singing lessons, going to drama, etc. And Mummy thought, I wonder if Sophie might like that, because I was this bundle of energy that wanted everything yesterday. And so I sort of had 10 minutes at the end of my sister's singing lesson. And, it was realised that that was where my focus was going to be best suited. So from there, it became an extracurricular, after school, 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock, Tuesday to Saturday, nothing else. I was consumed.
Wow, brilliant.
But the house was always full of music and theatrical sort of references. Sound of Music, I mean, we just mentioned it earlier, but, as a kid I watched the film, Wizard of Oz, all the old cliches, I'm afraid. But it sort of triggered something in me and I knew that was where I wanted to go.
And were your family very supportive of you wanting to do this as a profession?
Incredibly supportive, never pushy. It was me that put the pressure on myself, but Mummy and Daddy were just brilliant.
Obviously, I presume we're talking about singing. Did you do local shows and that sort of thing, and the acting and dancing as well?
I tell you what,
and
I did, sort of thing. Jason and I go back a long way.
Yeah, we'll get
fabulous. We'll get there in a minute.
This is interesting for me. I'm getting to know your pre-arts
ed. It was a local competition, a festival, which had all the different categories, the dance, the drama and the singing. And I sort of flew in the singing and the drama. That was my arena. And I just did the dancing for fun, really. That was great. I suppose I did that really locally from the age of 6 to 16. I all got a little bit serious around 14, 15. I thought, okay. And that's when I applied for Arts Ed, because it was the musical theatre course that enticed me. It was everything I thought that I wanted to do, rather than wait and go somewhere more, straight.
Yeah.
Like Guildhall or Lambda.
Yeah.
I wasn't that really that animal. And so that's where I fetched up at Chiswick.
Chiswick.
Bath Road.
Bath Road. I know. I won't give the year away, but...
yeah, it was last century.
It was only a few years ago. Anyway, I mean, obviously, I can remember my first experience, and I can remember, obviously, the time that we were there together. Mm. What was your, you know, your first initial, when you first got there, what was, for you, what was that like? I mean, I know we did our song with Tom Wakely, but what was that? I mean,
it was terrifying.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
I remember, actually, sort of the first day at Arts Ed, I sort of broke down. Because what you remember is, crikey, I thought I was good.
Yes.
Everybody's good. You know, we're all here for a reason. And no matter how much stamina or character you've got, you got to fight to hold your own. You were tested in that scenario, in that environment. And I think you have to steel yourself for that. Mm. I'm very, really, really proud of my training. I loved it. You must be as well.
Yeah, I think
it just gives you an absolute grounding and a technical foundation.
I think you're right in the sense that we were, you know, you did, again, for myself, I did get there and think, oh, God, there are other boys that are actually can do this besides me, as I was the only boy in my area that could do it. But suddenly, oh, my God. And but it was interesting, obviously, for me, because we were sort of close but not close at the same time.
Yes.
Through our 3 years, how people left.
Yeah.
And that was quite interesting, how you saw... and the people that stayed, like you and myself, you think, oh, yes, we're strong people, but we were still constantly tested.
And fell by the wayside.
People fell, but we were sort of jiggled up. I mean, I remember the particular dance teacher. One year, for me personally, was loved me, and you're amazing, you're amazing, amazing. Next year, I was nothing.
Mm.
So. Mm. As a kid, you think, what the hell's that all about?
But
and the question I'm asking you, when you look back at, and I'm just talking about Arts Ed now, that sort of scenario, do you think that's given you your, do you think that's a beginning of the birth of some strength?
Absolutely.
To stay in what we're doing?
I think, and what I always say to people coming into the profession, you have to remember. Bottom line is you have to remember what you bring to the table. You know, I'm 5'3", I've got 40-inch hips. I was never going to be a showgirl. But what I knew I had was character. Mm, mm. And that was always going to see me through. And it was very interesting. Shortly after I left Arts Ed, after I'd done my first job, I remember somebody saying, look, Sophie, it's great what you bring. You're going to grow into your casting. And if you can tough it out, you'll get there. Mm, and the proof's in the pudding. Mm, I was never one of those ingenues. I was always the kooky best friend, which is fine. But you just have to, if you have the grit and determination to remember what you actually have in your arsenal, you've got to stick with that.
So going back quickly to your training again, a good question that I like asking is, do you think training is necessary nowadays? Do you think it's, what's your views on training? Should people train or not train?
Categorically, yes.
Yes to train.
Yes to train. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I think I learnt more, you know, on my first day or first week in my job. But... a training gives you, as I said, a technical foundation, an etiquette, a protocol. Mm. It's interesting. I've been back to Arts Ed since to do some what we used to call performance class. Now they give it some zhuzhy title like acting through song.
Yes, to sing song,
yeah, which is great. And there are two things that strike me. There is an inordinate amount of confidence in these girls and boys, young performers nowadays, which is great. That can be seen a little bit as arrogance, but confident nevertheless. If it's channeled in a good way, all for the good. The other thing I was fascinated by, and you mentioned it, is the ratio of boys to girls. These days is equal, if not more. I mean, there are only four of you, you know.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary. Training is key.
Right. Okay.
I think, sorry, just to go, I think you're it's very interesting because I constantly, and I bore everyone, I go on about the family thing, the theatrical family. I talk about it constantly. And I think I try to keep it alive because it's wavers a little bit. It has wavered a little bit, and I don't sound like an old git, but it has wavered a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think somewhere like that, you learn your etiquette, which is a good word. But by learning etiquette and learning that, you actually have that respect to learn more.
Exactly, exactly. You never stop learning.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was a younger member, and this always makes me laugh now, it's like, when did I stop being the youngest member of the company? A long time ago. Yeah. But when I was young, I would learn off the older, experienced actors and performers like a sponge. Mm. Like a sponge, because they've been there, they've learned a craft, they know it. And I mean, I also think this comes down a little bit to the old equity, being a member of equity question. You know, when we came into the industry, you had to get an equity card, you had to work for that card, and it really meant something. I'm not saying it's wonderful that anybody and everybody can come and do a theatrical job now, but it just gave you a kind of to be part of that family, to be part of a union, really meant something for the profession.
So excellent. It was continuing excellence.
Continuing excellence. That's a very good phrase. Yeah.
So what happened after you left Arts Edge? What was your first job?
Well, I can hardly believe it, but I was a hoofer. I went to the open audition, 42nd Street, and there were a few of us that went, and three of us got the job. And it was like a dream come true. It was fabulous, fabulous score, fabulous frocks, fabulous wigs. It was great. And that was a tour, a national tour, and then we came in to the Dominion for a brief season, a bit like White Christmas has done now. And that was amazing. We came back into London, so that was great. I, at the time, had, at Arts Edge, this is another interesting thing for people coming into the industry. These days, I believe, in your final year, you get a showcase, you get headshots, you get an agent, three shows, you're signed up and you are ready to go. I mean, we were lucky if we got a slap round the face and a piece and a pair of tap shoes, you know.
Well, we did a show in our second year where you and I played leads.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And then we did that one show in the third year and we were double cast and we did, so we went on every night and we did a showcase for 3 days.
That's right. And you were lucky if an agent came. Now, an agent did come and they signed me up. And at that point, I didn't have an equity card. 42nd Street got it for me. And then I carried on with a wonderful old Jewish lady called June Epstein. And she had very, very pertinent views. I did my chorus job. She said, no more chorus. Pass.
So after that first, after 42nd
after that
Street.
First job.
Good for her.
Which is brave.
Which is brave.
And scary.
It's brave because obviously she's experienced, she knows about it. But for you, you want to work.
I want to work.
You know.
Yeah.
So that was a big, big decision. But we stuck by it. We stuck with it. And I did some wonderful jobs. I played Polly Peachum in Vegas Opera in Holland Park, which is now a very lovely opera season. That was sort of in its infancy. I then did Regent's Park. I did all those nice little jobs that people, you know, think, ooh, it'd be nice to do a season there, etc. Rather than going into the chorus of Les Mis or Saigon or all the things that were there at the time. And it became very clear that I was going to go down a different avenue.
And what avenue, where did that lead you? Where did you, has your career kind of changed and shaped itself as it's gone on?
Yeah, it did. It did actually. And I always had another string to my bow, which was the classical voice. And I'm skipping ahead, but I had a wonderful, I think, four seasons with the newly formed D'Oyly Carte at the Savoy, which was a wonderful time. And if somebody had said to me, crikey, you're going to do the canon of Gilbert and Sullivan, I'd have laughed at them. I really would. But do it I did, and it was incredible. I was able to put my stamp on a lot of those roles that once upon a time would have just been forgotten. But because I had great directors, Martin Duncan, Ian Talbot, Ian Judge, who used the ammunition in my arsenal, really, to do all that work. So that was an interesting time. I loved it. And along the way, I've changed agents, and I guess we're coming up to where I first came across a fantastic director, Philip George, and Forbidden Broadway, the first time round. Yeah. I'm going back to 1999.
Right.
Yeah. Ooh. Long time ago. And 1999, 2009, and then this year, different versions of Forbidden Broadway, which I guess I'm sort of known for. It's like, you know, you think Forbidden Broadway in the UK, and they go, oh, Sophie Louise Dan, which
brilliant.
Is fabulous.
Yeah.
It's fabulous.
Sophie being Susie Boyle.
How did you get that? Tell us how you got that.
Interestingly enough, I was doing a play for Philip George called Frankly Scarlet, where I met my husband, Nick Colicos, who Jason worked with as well.
Yes. Again, a long time ago.
Again, a long time ago. Big American guy. That's by the by, but that was one of the best things that happened in that play. And Philip had never heard me sing at that point. And we did this great play called Frankly Scarlet. And a year or so went by, and I remember getting a call from my agent at that time, Barry Burnett. He said, would you go and sing for Philip George? I went, of course I will. He said, well, take everything that you've got, you know, a little bit of, what does that mean?
Yeah,
you know,
everything
you've got. And basically, I took in a poppy song, I took in a music hall song, and Philip had me do it, and he said, Soph, can you just be Julie Andrews? Could you be Judy Garland? Could you be, and all, you know, named all these divas. And you just kind of apply yourself. You just find a hook, a vocal hook.
Yeah.
Almost like a vowel sound or something. And that can be as easy as it is. And just channel it. And there we are.
But
the rest
it's interesting
is history.
You say about that. And this is not a direct, and it might, you know, it's not a direct link as such. But you said earlier about the cliches of watching the big movies. same for me. I watched all those movies as well. And it's interesting because we were talking about students earlier. You do need to know the history.
Yeah.
And there's not a direct link there at all, but maybe there is that from you learning the history.
Yes.
You didn't just know them, but they subconsciously were in you from from childhood.
Exactly.
Impressionable childhood.
Yes.
As opposed to you watching it as a bit of research.
I know.
So it's interesting. I'm going back a bit really, but training, but also
in the DNA.
Know your history. I suppose I'm asking you, is that important, really? And I've answered
Absolutely.
It for you, but I'm asking.
No, but I mean, these days, it's God, YouTube is just a wealth of information. I think it can be dangerous as well because, you know, if you watch a video, you think, oh, I can do that. You can't do that, but go back to your source material, go back to all those great writers, and before we get on to talking about new material, you know, learn your basic foundation of all those great songwriters, the great American songbook, the English history, Gilbert and Sullivan, go right back, because it will inform you with everything that happens today.
Because it's interesting, we were talking about the government inspector, which you yourself have done,
yes,
which I directed some time ago. Yeah. But I personally, when I was doing it, I realised that the comic timing came from things like Carry On and all that sort of stuff as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
So do you think that the as an actress... Mm-hmm. Do you feel that comes in as well? Do you? And again, it's not that you, as if to say, oh, now I'm going to be such and such in a Carry On movie. But do you think that that's important as well?
I think
you know,
everything can inform you in whatever you're playing. The other thing that I was very fortunate to be part of was when the old Players Music Hall at what is now the new Charing Cross Theatre, but I still call it the Players. You know, there you learnt another skill, absolute breaking the fourth wall, you know, communicating with the audience, all the patter with the chairman, which is, I think, a dying art. But it's such a shame, because those routines and that wealth of comedy is very difficult to find these days.
And people think it's very easy.
The hardest form, it really is. I suppose we should skip forward a little bit to more recent history and everything that... Because everything went into fast forward, I think, after Lend Me a Tenor, musical. Which, a fantastic team, an original score, but original score with great Broadway values. We were fortunate enough to have Paul Gemignani as our musical supervisor, who is just a genius.
Yes.
Sondheim's, one of Sondheim's musical supervisors, directors, a drummer by profession, but incredible musical director and supervisor. Brad Carroll, Peter Shan, and they created for me Diana Devane. Which was this amazing operatic diva, but operatic diva with a soft center.
I mean, I didn't see you, but I have heard the recording of your number. And I know I saw you do your number at your cabaret.
Yes, yeah.
And it's a tour de force song. It's not even a song.
It's a tour de force,
written
aria, really.
Yeah.
And everything...
Were you knackered?
No, I wasn't, Jason. It was the best 5 minutes on stage every night. And I absolutely loved it. I relished it. And what was wonderful from that was the industry kind of endorsed it and went, yeah. This is Sophie Louise Dan. This is what she does.
Absolutely. Well, you got your Olivier nomination,
which was incredible.
And I have to say, I think I wrote to you at the time. You know, I think you'd worked long enough and hard enough to deserve it. So,
thank you so much.
You know, you really did. You know, you really have worked at it. And I just thought, for that alone, that's why I wrote to you, to congratulate you for that reason.
Yeah.
Because. That's the thing, to stick in it and stay in it.
Yeah.
And if we think about the people in our year, there's not many of us.
I tell you who
so
we
So that alone you should deserve the nomination.
We must mention one of our colleagues, lovely Helen Goldwyn.
Yes, yeah.
Who is fantastic. Her writing at the moment is flying. And
yes.
I'm so thrilled.
Yes.
And I was so delighted to be able to sing one of her songs in my cabaret.
Yes.
And I can't wait to have the opportunity to do more of her work.
Well, she's writing a lot, so I'm sure she
great
would love you to do more.
Bravo, absolutely. Helen.
So let's talk about new writing now.
Yes.
You're inmained in Dagenham at the moment,
yeah.
But what other new writing you kind of have been involved with recently?
I've been on board a few new projects. We should talk about Molly Wobbly last year, written by the incredible Paul Boyd, Northern Irish writer, full of love and life and vim and vigor. And I think I said it all last year. We sort of opened and closed on the same day in Hackney because a backer, major backer, pulled out at the 11th hour. And there was, I mean, we're all party to readings and workshops. This was a fully staged production, not a studio revival, fully staged production with private money, which, you know, without it, you're not gonna go on. But you have to admire people for doing this. And as my mantra at the moment seems to be, unless we take a risk with new material, we will live in a museum culture. I'm very fortunate to be playing Barbara Castle, as I said, in this new musical version of Made in Dagenham. It's a big commercial risk, but we've got a stellar creative team. Rupert Gould directing, Richard Thomas lyrics, David Arnold score, and Richard Bean book. You can't beat it. You really can't beat it. But we still have to get the word of mouth out there.
Yeah.
Because it's not about catalogue score.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, this thing about new writing. I mean, you. It's great to see the old ones come back. It really is. And it's really interesting when they did that TV show. Sonia Friedman was on about the play writing, finding a new play.
That's like right.
A reality
yes.
competition
yes.
show. And the play was on for a short while. Mm. And it seems that, I suppose it's producers, are scared to take that risk. And you can absolutely understand that. But I suppose if it comes from nowhere, then it's never going to happen. And, and obviously, usually, any new writings you see are in a pub theatre somewhere, that's it. Thank you
that's
very much
it.
For your that, 3 weeks and goodbye.
That's it. And you know, I think every performer has the choice to take work, paid or unpaid. That is someone's choice.
Mm.
But it shouldn't be a trend that we work for no money. You know, we didn't come into this profession, and that's what it is to be for it to be a hobby.
No.
Or an amateur occupation.
Stated.
Exactly. Mm. So I am a little afeared of the trend at the moment, the vogue at the moment, to put large-scale musicals into small studio fringe spaces where a lot of the casts are not being paid. Rather, I would see some money being pumped into new work and giving that a platform for 6 weeks.
Absolutely.
Other than Molly Wobbly, I was also involved in a wonderful piece last year called Mrs. Gucci. Truth is stranger than fiction. And Mrs. Gucci and her partner in crime are currently serving life prison sentences for a murder of her husband.
Oh, it's the best publicity you could ever have.
Isn't
wow.
It? It's extraordinary. And that is a fabulous score by Marcus de Cruz and Peter Jukes. And, you know, all these little jewels, I hope, will come to fruition. Mm, but they'll only come to fruition if they're given a platform.
Mm. How can we, as performers, support all of this? And is there anything that we out there can do other than spreading the word and hearing about this?
I think it's helped incredibly with the social media networks. And if you are involved in something like that, you sort of have a duty yourself to spread the gospel. Mm-hmm. If, you know, because we not all of us are blessed with PR and marketing machines. You know, like the show I'm in at the moment.
But I think it's interesting. I think it's what's interesting is that you were talking about choices and decisions and whatever. And I think it's. I think what is interesting is I think you're absolutely right. Why put the biggest Broadway musical in a 60 box place? It makes, again, for me, it makes no sense.
Mm.
But these new, something new that's maybe a small ensemble. Yes, wonderful. And what I think what's interesting is that you're talking about choices. So you're doing this and or Sunday in the Park or yeah. something that's big.
Yes.
Big. And performers like yourself can maybe make that decision. Yes, I'll do that for maybe 2p for a short while
exactly.
because I believe in it.
Yeah.
But then you can go back into your big
I
thing.
Know.
And I'm not sure if everyone wants to make that decision or
make
that commitment,
choice.
That choice.
Yeah.
What's your feeling on that? I mean, it's obviously everyone's personal choice, but do you feel...
Well, interesting.
I mean, is it a choice that you would make? Would you go for a small thing for a little run if you believed in it?
Absolutely. Interestingly enough, this wasn't a new piece, but I was involved in Gaze the Word, which was Ivor Novello's last piece. Pocket-sized production at the Finborough and a pocket-sized production at Jermyn Street.
Mm.
Now, I knew that I had Sunday in the Park with George
coming up.
So I absolutely had the choice to say, yes, I'll do that for, you know, very little money. It's a great opportunity to inhabit Gay Daventry. And what was absolutely wonderful is the young ensemble in that were absolutely committed because they were passionate about it as well.
Mm.
So I think... How can we wrap this up?
I think the point that I'm making is people such as yourself that are known in the industry, that have done very well in the industry, if they can bring them to do Gaze the Word or whatever, it's because we live in this industry lives in fame. So if there is a name such as yourself attached to a project,
it sort of endorses it and it does encourage. Yeah,
and I think I'm actually telling people out there that are good performers that it's not a bad thing maybe to do that once in a while.
Absolutely, everyone's got a choice.
Mm.
Everyone has a choice, and if you, it depends what you see. It goes back to what you bring to the table.
Mm.
I think that old adage.
Yeah, you've got to know what you're bringing to the table.
Yeah, absolutely,
and what you're prepared to.
And what you're prepared to commit to.
Mm.
Good. That kind of
that's a nice little bookend.
We've come full circle.
Yeah, we have.
Okay, so. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
It's an absolute pleasure.
You remain in Dagenham at the moment.
Yeah.
People can come and see that at the Adelphi
Theatre. Come and see us. It's a great night out. It's very funny. And it's about the Essex girls who changed the world.
Brilliant. Excellent. And can people find you on Twitter? You on Twitter or Facebook? People can follow you, maybe?
I am on Twitter. This is cringeful. I should know what it is. It's Sophie L. Dan Fans.
Sophie L. Dan Fans.
Yes, at Sophie L. Dan Fans.
Excellent.
Follow me.
Dan Fans.
Brilliant. Okay, and if you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at DBSD Podcast. Subscribe on iTunes. We've got some more episodes coming up for you soon, so look out for those. And that's it. So thank you again
thank
for coming
you
on. Thanks for having us here.
Take care.
And that's it for this week. So thanks, everyone, for listening. I'm Steve Bradley.
I'm Jason B. Moore.
And I'm Sophie Louise Dan.
Don't be so dramatic.